You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Once upon a time, George Gershwin and Zygmunt Romberg, and indeed half the writers on Broadway, got involved in a Flo Ziegfeld musical about a princess from one of those Ruritanian backwaters where everybody's got a name like an obscure kind of Swiss cheese. This princess comes to America and falls for a lieutenant. The princess mother and father, known back home as Mr. and Mrs. King, put up the bar to any kind of morganatic marriage, that is, any marriage to anybody called King Morgan. The king then abdicates and the princess is able to marry the lieutenant and live courageously ever after on the meagre pay of a queen of romanza. Anyway, for this hodgepodge of Republican lunacy, the Gershwins wrote a few trifles like How Long Has This Been Going On? The show ran 335 performances, made a lot of money, and at last attracted the attention of Mr. Louis B. Mayer, who possibly thought that Rosalie was Cockney rhyming slang for tea. Anyway, that was in 1928, and moving with its accustomed lightning speed, MGM mounted the screen version of Rosalie only 9 years later. Only they dumped the entire score and called in just about the only outstanding songwriter who had not had anything to do with the original. Amazing as it seems, Cole Porter came up with a song even finer than anything in the stage show.
In the still of the night, as I gaze out of my window at the moon in its flight, my thoughts all stray to you. In the still of the night, while the world is in slumber, for the times without number, baby, when I say to you, do you love me as I love you? Dream come true, or will this dream of mine fade out of sight like the moon growing dim on the rim of the hill in the chill still of the just like the moon that keeps getting dim way out on the rim of that there hill in the chill, 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 chill still of the night.
In the Still of the Night, one of the masterpieces of the 1930s. But the point about that outstanding version is that we can be pretty sure Cole Porter would have disliked it. Porter disliked any version of his songs where the musicians took liberties with the printed text. like Richard Rodgers and Jerome Kern, but unlike George Gershwin, Porter considers his own text sacrosanct, a truth which comes out of a story Andre Previn tells with some relish. When he was slaving at the centrally heated air-conditioned galleys of MGM, Previn was assigned to score a Porter film. The studio decided to send Previn to discuss the matter with Porter over lunch. That way, Previn would get it from the horse's mouth, and also the studio would be saved the expense of two lunches. Out goes Previn to see Porter, and although there are only the two of them for lunch, a waiter hands Previn a menu, from which he selects an item or two. Then the discussions begin. Porter says he will not try to tell Previn how to do his job, but will merely play him a recording of the sort of thing he does not wish Previn to do to his music. He then plays him a version of From This Moment On, recorded by the Woody Herman Orchestra. When it's over, Porter sighs and says to Previn, "As long as you avoid that sort of thing." Previn, the soul of courtesy, agrees, takes the point, finishes the lunch and goes. Not having had the heart to admit to Porter that the orchestration by the Herman Band, which gave Porter such offence, was a Previn orchestration. But then Porter was never comfortable in Hollywood, having picked up the odd idea from somewhere or other that the moguls were not quite his intellectual or social equals. Still, he did write them some sumptuous songs. Much they cared. When they received the sumptuous songs, they nonchalantly assigned them to the kind of singers you usually put out with the empty milk bottles at night. This next song was introduced in the picture by James Stewart hiding behind a naval uniform. This version is much better.
But grant me just the same, I'm not entirely to blame.
Easy to Love from the 1936 Eleanor Powell extravaganza Born to Dance, in which Miss Powell borrows the entire United States Pacific Battle Fleet because the deck timbers are so well suited to tap dancing. Now, the only thing to shout about in 1942 was the fact that Irving Berlin dropped White Christmas on an unsuspecting world and thereby obliterated every other song of the year. Well, it so happens that there were a lot of casualties that year among songs which I feel were in a higher league than White Christmas, including I Remember You, Tangerine, There'll Never Be Another You, Serenade in Blue, That Old Black Magic, and several others. But there was no arguing with the sentimental attachment to White Christmas, and among the casualties was that Cole Porter song from Something to Shout About.
You'd be so nice to come home to. You'd be so nice by the fire, while the breeze on high sang a lullaby. You'd be all that I could desire, under stars chilled by the winter, under an August moon burning above. You'd be so nice, you'd be paradise to come home to and love. You'd be so, so nice. You'd be paradise to come home to and love.
You'd be so nice to come home to, written in 1878, although not by Cole Porter. When he was sketching out the song, Porter was unsure of the title and almost settled for You Would Be So Wonderful to Come Home to Come Home To, Someone to Keep Me Warm, and so on. All this we get from the very learned, complete lyrics of Cole Porter, edited by Robert Kimball, with the kind of skill only to be looked for in a farmyard. Having told us the alternate titles, Kimball cleverly leaves out the only really relevant factor, which is that the melodic idea comes from something a bit remote from wartime Broadway. It comes from Sherlock Holmes' favourite violinist, the Spaniard Pablo Sarasate, said to be the only man ever born in Pamplona who never met Ernest Hemingway and never went around waving bits of dead bull. Sarasate was a violin virtuoso who also composed pieces, among which was Zigeunerweisen, which is Spanish-German for Gypsy Airs. The joke is that the theme he wrote into Zigeunerweisen that Cole Porter lifted was lifted by Sarasate too, who admitted before he began that the whole thing was a collection of folk songs. Anyway, here is a telltale fragment of You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To that Sherlock Holmes used to like listening to. Think of it, the way that Sarasate melody goes off the rail so quickly there suggests to me that Cole Porter wasn't the only one who was tempted to borrow from it. I have a suspicion that Sherlock Holmes too used to sit around playing bits of that on his violin when there wasn't a good mystery to solve. The music does sound very much to me like the Sherlock Holmes style, all kinds of discords followed by the neatest of resolutions. As for Porter, he made no bones about borrowing wherever he could find a good idea, and once said that the idea for one of his big songs, Night and Day, came from the Mohammedan call to prayer he heard one day in Morocco. Although I think that's going a bit too far in the quest for decent melody. Nobody so far has told me the origins of this next song, although I'm absolutely convinced I've heard it before. Originally, I remember it as a fastish waltz, a Victorian piece of light music, which much later became transmuted by Cole Porter into this.
Strange day. Not true, dear. When I'm close to you, dear, the stars fill the sky. even without you, my arms fold about you. So in love with you am I, in love with the night, mysterious, the night when you first were there, in love with my joy, delirious, when I knew that you could care, so
from Kiss Me Kate, which never fails to set up in my head the sound of that old-fashioned waltz. Kiss Me Kate was, of course, Cole Porter's masterpiece, his gesture in the cause of better librettos, the equivalent in his canon of Gershwin's Paulie and Bess, Jerome Kern's Showboat, and Richard Rodgers' Pal Joey. But as always, the best versions of the songs were not quite achieved either in the stage show or in the Hollywood version that followed. That's a truth that applies to every great show ever written, for reasons obvious enough, what with stage performers having to act, dance, sell programs, and so on, and for whom singing is only one of several talents required. The recording artist, on the other hand, has only the singing to worry about. And that's how we've ended up with this.
A troupe of strolling players are we, not stars like L.B. Mayers are we, but just a simple band who roams about the land, dispensing fol-de-rol frivolity. Mere folk who give distraction are we.
New theatre give attraction are we.
Oh, shut up, Sam.
But just a crazy group that never ceases to troop around the map of Little Italy.
Well, here we go back to the home country again.
We open in Venice, we next play Verona, then on to Cremona.
Lots of laughs in Cremona, hey boy.
Our next jump in Parma, that dopey mopey menace. Then Mantua, then Padua, then we open again.
Where?
We open in Venice, we next play Verona, then on to Cremona.
Lots of bars in Cremona.
Our next jump in Parma,
that fearless, cheerless menace.
Then
in Mantua, then Padua.
Then we open again?
Where? We open in Venice. We next play Verona, then on to Cremona.
Lots of money in Cremona.
Our next jump in Parma.
That dingy, smingy menace.
Then Mantua, then Padua.
And we open again?
Where? We open in Venice. We next play Verona, then on to Cremona.
Lots of quail in Cremona.
Ah! Our next jump in Parma. That heartless, heartless menace. Then Mantua, then Padua. Then we open again. Where?
Oh, well, let me see now. I got a map. Let's pick out someplace.
Yeah, well, just don't take it too far down the line there.
Oh, well, let's take the first canyon out of here.
Matter of fact, if we hurry, we can beat the tab. Of course, yeah. The sheriff's out there waiting for us.
Sinatra, Dean Martin and Sammy Davis opening in Venice from Kiss Me Kate. Their show, of course, was inspired by an Englishman called Will Shakespeare, but it was by no means the only Porter score inspired by an Englishman. Another was King George V, because if it hadn't been for him, there would have been no Cole Porter show of 1935. What happened was that Porter and Moss Hart went on a world cruise that year and were very impressed by the royal junketing to celebrate the Silver Jubilee of King George and Queen Mary, and they actually decided to write a musical about it. The story was about a king and queen who get so fed up with being king and queen that they disguise themselves as commoners and spend some time among ordinary folk, hence the song in the show, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. The great sleeper was Begin the Begin, which never became a hit until Artie Shaw made it one sometime after the show closed. But it was one other rather pleasant ballad which underlines one of the rewards, I think, of researching a career like Porter's. There are so many forgotten and obscure items which are really worth a better fate. This one from Jubilee was noticed a little at the time, but it's never remotely approached the status of a standard song, which is a pity.
All my life I've been so secluded, love has eluded me. But from knowing secondhand what I'd do of it, I feel certain I could stand a closer view of it. Till today I studied love discreetly, but now that I'm completely free, I must find some kind persona grata to give me data personally. Why shouldn't I take a chance when romance passes by? Why shouldn't I know of love? Why wait around when each age has a sage who has found that upon this earth love is all that is really worth thinking of? It must be fun, lots of fun, to be sure. When day is done, that the hour is coming when you'll be kissed and then you'll be kissed again. All debutantes say it's good, and every star out in far Hollywood seems to give it a try. So why shouldn't I? Why shouldn't I? Why shouldn't I?
Why Shouldn't I, from the 1935 Cole Porter show Jubilee, the musical whose cast list includes thinly disguised portraits of Noel Coward and Johnny Weissmuller, as well as the king and queen of an unspecified English-speaking country. However, as this is the only English-speaking country which has kings and queens, it wasn't really unspecified at all. Let me now divert from Cole Porter to a very different kind of popular song, the point number, meaning a song which depends more for the style of delivery and the personality of the singer than on any stage effects. The song raises that old question of how partners ever manage to come together. Focus for a moment on Michael H. Cleary, born in 1902 and trained to be a soldier at West Point Academy. Having graduated from that famous establishment, Cleary emerged well qualified to take his first job as a resident organist in a Catholic chapel. Soon he met up with a man called David Oppenheim, although not, I should think, in the Catholic chapel. Cleary and Oppenheim have everything in common because while Cleary is a trained organ-playing soldier, Oppenheim is a professional baseball player. Cleary persuades Oppenheim to collaborate in a song, which I suppose is known as Taking the Pitcher to the Well, and the result is the only hit that either of them was ever destined to have.
When a lady meets a gentleman down south, neath the Swanee moon to a Swanee tune they love, then the lady tells a gentleman down south, sure it's mighty fine just to know your mind, my love. Then they walk along where magnolias grow, two hearts sing a song that was written long ago. Now if that ain't sweet romance, then hush my mouth. Gentleman down south, when a lady meets a gentleman, real fine gentleman from the south, then the lady knows life could be worthwhile with a gentleman from the south. Then they walk along where magnolias grow, two hearts sing a song that was written long ago. Now if that ain't sweet romance, then hush my mouth.
When a Lady Meets a Gentleman Down South, written by a soldier and a baseball player in 1935, in one of this month's more interesting revival albums, one of the EMI Golden Age series features Fred Astaire. A lot of the Astaire titles on this album are duplicates of an album which came out not so long ago called Crazy Feet. But no matter, because judging from listeners' letters, Crazy Feet has not been all that easy to locate. The new issue is simply called The Golden Age of Fred Astaire, Volume 2. A title which intrigues me because I don't recall Volume 1. Once again, no matter, because Volume 2 includes the track which so many people have inquired after. It's a song from the London production of Lady Be Good, 1926, but not the New York production of the same show in 1924. For London, a couple of additional songs were included, with lyrics by that irrepressible joker, Desmond Carter. The singers are Fred and Adele, but what seems to attract a lot of people, and I can see why, is the identity of the piano accompanist.
I've seen for days that you've got some ways that must be checked, and you one never can detect the slightest signs of intellect. You're mad on dances, think of the chances you neglect. You never seem inclined to use your mind, and it's quite plain to see that I'm the brains of the family. Take a lesson from me.
I'd rather Charleston.
Charleston, oh, that's the sort of thing silly people do. Say, haven't you read what Lincoln said in 62?
Yeah!
Well, what'd he say?
I'd rather Charleston.
Oh,
Charleston,
no.
Charleston with you.
Not me.
Fred and Adele Astaire singing the words of Desmond Carter and the music of George Gershwin, and that was Gershwin himself on the piano there, enjoying himself immensely in this country, and according to one biographer, getting a big kick out of the fact that while he was living in London, Gertrude Lawrence was selecting his shirts and ties, and Isadora Duncan used to come up and sharpen his pencils. Another track on this intriguing Astaire revival album is something called Not My Girl, again with words by Desmond Carter. But although the album, I think, is a must for those who cherish musical comedy history, I'm going to play a different version of Not My Girl because of the marvellous musical feel of the accompaniment, or rather, both accompanists.
Here's another one. This one always amused me. I wrote it over 20 years ago, I guess, with a very clever English lyricist named Desmond Carter. This one gained a little recognition over there. As I said before, piano playing was a serious hobby of mine. So, you know, I was bound to sneak some of it in here someplace. I'll start off by playing the first chorus the same style as I used to do it then. Oscar rescues me and takes it from there. Here I go with Not My Girl. To surrender girls, I've got one of a tougher kind, rougher kind, the make men suffer kind, who's sweet to me, not my girl, who's kind to me, not my girl. You want to know what my girl can be? Listen to me. The sight of her wakes men up, a day with her shakes men up, she practically breaks men up. She's not an Annabelle Lee. Without her, I could not exist. The way that she loves is frightening. And on the day that she and I first kissed, I thought I was struck by lightning. Who's heavenly, not my girl? Who wants to be not my girl? If only you'd got my girl, you know what's the matter with me. To me, not my girl, who's kind to me, not my girl. Do you want to know what my girl can be? Listen to me. The moment she chooses you, your family loses you. Her kissing just bruises you. You learn what loving can be. Some girls knit socks, but she's not quite the sort to be neat and tidy. And the socks she gave me Wednesday night just put me to sleep till Friday. Who's heavenly, not my girl? Who wants to be not my girl? If only you'd got my girl. you know what's the matter with me.
Not My Girl, featuring the very rarely heard piano playing of Fred Astaire. Those recordings he made with Oscar Peterson and company back in the mid-1950s were remarkable in more ways than one. Not only did they present old songs in new settings, with usually lower keys, but they also exposed Fred Astaire as a dancer in a way that neither he nor any dancer normally dares. When you read of the weeks of preparation required for the great Hollywood dances, this comes as a revelation. Here is Fred winging it.
You know, this album is a kind of jazz album, too, and jazz means the blues. Oscar, Barney, Alvin, and Ray are going to ad-lib some of those blues now, and I'm going to walk in and throw a little hoofing in there. We like these slow blues so much that we decided to do a couple of them.
Fred Astaire's feet and grunts, accompanied by Oscar Peterson piano, Barney Kessel guitar, Ray Brown bass, and Alvin Stoller drums. To close, a return to the prolific list of Cole Porter.
It was just one of those things, just one of those crazy flings. One of those bells that now and then rings, just one of those things. It was just one of those nights, just one of those fabulous flights. A trip to the moon on gossamer wings, just one of those things. If we'd thought a bit of the end of it when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware that our love affair was too hot not to cool down. So goodbye, dear, and amen. Here's hoping we meet now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things. We'll be right back.
That's it. See you same time next week.
Just one of those bells that now and then ring. Just one of those things. A trip to the moon on gossamer wings. Just one of those things. If we thought a bit of the end of it when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware that our love affair was too hot not to cool down. So goodbye, dear, and amen. Here's hoping we meet now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.